If I've learned anything is that every platform tool is supposed to give back time, another one finds a way to take it. So I wonder about, do we have more time for this or that?
Guided by over 25 years in the data and research industry and assisting innovators with investment banking and advisory services, Seema Vasa brings you Data Gurus, a leading market research podcast that offers actionable insights for business acceleration and value creation. Join her as she speaks with key innovators in the space to bring you up to speed with the current state and the future of data analytics and data ecosystems. This is Data Gurus. Need support on your market research projects? Paradigm Sample is a full-service market research solutions provider. Whether you need help with questionnaire design, survey programming, or online data collection, we are ready to assist. Paradigm can do as little or as much as you need, saving you time so that you can focus on insights. Learn more at ParadigmSample.com.
Welcome to another episode of Data Gurus. This is Seema Vasa, and today I have Patrick Comer joining me, and we are going to be talking about something so exciting. But before we get into it, welcome, Patrick.
Seema, it is a blessing to be with you. I think we've done a podcast before.
Yes.
And so it's good to be with you again. It's good
Thank
times.
You. Thank you. Well, we wanted to do this episode together because we wanted to talk a little bit about what we've been working on. Why don't you talk a little bit about the history of the ResTech landscape since the last time it was published was when?
The last time we released the landscape was like 2019, maybe going into 2020.
Yep.
Pre-COVID timeframe, if I recall.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been 3 years since we've had any update. However, in that time, the phrase and concept of ResTech has become ubiquitous.
Yes.
It's exciting to see that happen, but it's also time for an update to occur.
Definitely. And when we started collaborating on the update of the ResTech landscape, just looking at every company on the sampling of companies we have on that map, so much has happened. I think when I looked at it, there were at least 30 plus acquisitions. About 80 companies raised debt financing or equity. I mean, there has just been a lot going on since that first publication.
Well, I think the mission originally, we think back to when the concept of ResTech really, I guess the right word is, was agreed upon or voted on at SampleCon, I'm going to say 2018, 2017.
I remember that, SampleCon.
So we needed to put a name to the progress and the tech evolutions happening in our industry. And that's what we came up with, which is a big moment. When we look at other industries that have this kind of digital transformation or this evolution of tech really impacting how the industry performs, there's always some sense of a landscape, a visualization of how the industry is structured, where the companies are in it. And the purpose or the goal is so that we can highlight the industry not only to ourselves, but also to the outside world, whether it's another strategic partner or an investing partner. So it doesn't surprise me that the number of transactions, whether it's called equity or debt or M&A or whatever, has also grown, partly I would say because there is a ResTech identity, a ResTech landscape. But also, I think a lot of those were in the run-up to 2021, which was a fabulous and very active year for transactions. Yes. I think if we look at pre and post January 22 transactions, we might see a different kind of view on it.
Totally agree.
But a huge amount has changed in terms of the company's transactions and lay of the land, as it were, since the last update.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that one of the reasons I was passionate about doing this as well is that I think the industry is really going through a bit of an identity crisis. And when you're in it, it just feels so overwhelming. But when you look and talk to people outside of the industry, the value that the industry provides to brands, to financial markets, just to provide good, solid insights to drive decisions, people are in awe of the industry, right? Tech or non-tech. It provides tremendous value. And that's one of my passion points of just saying, yes, there's tech coming into play. It's pervasive in our personal lives. It's pervasive in business. Let's look at it together and let's understand the dynamics of the market.
I would say almost a celebration of the value of these, right?
Yeah.
A celebration of what's changing and evolving and what we need to be paying attention to in it.
Yeah. And also helping companies that might not have been the early adopters of some sort of tech, but giving them a roadmap potentially of saying, okay, maybe I don't need to do exactly what that company is doing, but I understand some of the mechanics, the business model. I might look at it this way. Because let's face facts, when ResTech was first launched, everybody all of a sudden said they're ResTech and SaaS.
Right. What happened? ResTech and SaaS.
And then the dust settled and they're like, okay, maybe there's some tech-enabled services here.
Well, I think everyone, one of the things that happens when you introduce a concept of ResTech in a landscape and owners or leaders in various businesses start to understand how outside parties will view the value of the business.
Yeah.
Start making decisions around what type of company they are or want to grow up to, right? What am I going to be when I grow up kind of question.
Yeah.
And it's a norm that technology companies that are SaaS and subscription oriented may have a different value. But what we've seen over the past couple of years, especially after 2021's height, is a return to what I maybe call core value around profitability, around cash flow generation, around EBITDA versus just revenue growth. There's been a slight rebalance in terms of how people are viewing the success of a company.
Yeah.
I think it's actually really healthy because I think there's some unnatural twists and turns that companies go through in order to look like something that may not be actually healthy for them in the long term or for their customers. So I think there's a nice rebalancing going on of what's important.
I totally agree. And a lot of times when I speak to clients, they're always wanting to potentially think about their valuation and as a result, pivot and lose their customer base in the process. And that is such I think about personal habits changing. It takes forever. Then you're changing a company with hundreds of people. It does not happen overnight.
It's a very challenging pivot from a tech-enabled service to a pure SaaS subscription model. And I think people underestimate all the aspects to it. And I think you hit to the biggest one is the cultural dynamic shift.
Yes.
That's not a small task. Not a company can successfully make the change.
Yeah. I guess I also wanted to make this point, Patrick, like tech obviously is important and these business models that drive value might be settling a little bit just on the revenue front, but EBITDA is important as well. I also think that it's not good or bad. It just depends on where your craft is and where you want to be on the landscape. And so if you love the art of high-end market research, segmentation, whatever you have, that's good for you. It doesn't mean it's bad in general. And I felt like that kind of became a little bit of a trend when it was first launched. And it's like, oh my gosh, I'm not ResTech. But no, you're really good at this and that's okay.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I love to look at value as more than a financial valuation.
Yes.
You can impact an industry and do good work regardless of your technical position, as it were, or your. And so I think a lot of great things are happening in our industry that are not just based on tech evolution or the cutting edge of the newest technology.
Yeah. And I think our new landscape rollout encompasses that. We've tried to balance the coverage, a little bit more sampling of those other companies and tried to create a broader view or a more inclusive view.
That's exactly right. I think the two things that we've done is we've shifted the landscape 90 degrees.
Yes. What do we call them? Pancakes? The pancakes?
We could call it the pancake layers.
Yeah.
Really trying to identify all the different steps in the value proposition or the value creation. And to your point, really looking at what are all the important players in the space, not just the only tech-oriented position there. And then there are also two other kind of through lines that we try to identify. One is around the spectrum between maybe services or tech-enabled services to SaaS. And so people can imagine, where is this company in that spectrum? And I think the other one, which of course is a hot button item these days, is where is this company in their footing in terms of where AI is coming into play, which is the largest kind of existential opportunity and threat the industry has seen in a while.
Yes. in a big while, and actually for the world. We won't go to a dark place. Okay.
Yeah, let's go to an exciting place.
Yeah. Let's talk about AI. I mean, we did some one-on-one conversations with leaders in the industry, and we've had our own conversations. What do you think of AI in our industry as a accelerant or a maybe it completely changes the landscape, like in a year or 2 years, this landscape's totally different? Those are two extremes.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of, dare I say, both. Yeah. I think there are experiments happening right now. I think a lot of, looking at it on one level, a lot of the new companies in our space that are getting funding are AI first. So they are running various experiments across the value chain, whether it's everything from insights generation to sampling. There's a lot of just AI first companies that are brand new companies. And I think there are also a lot of experiments happening within research agencies to add AI or to have back. They've been doing AI for a while, back when it was just called machine learning versus AI. So a lot of people think, it's like, wait a minute, we've been doing this for a while. What's changed all of a sudden? So I think there's a lot of experiments, and I think it'll take a while for the true value creation of those experiments to be understood.
I agree.
And then if those are unlocked, then I think we could see a much faster kind of evolution or shift occur. But right now, I see just tons of experiments across the board. I think the other key thing is that the end customer, the brands, are asking for all those experiments to occur.
Yeah.
They are also thinking about this, how Gen AI could impact their capabilities and their insights generation and speed, and are asking their resource partners to essentially help them understand what could be possible here.
Here's where I think AI is incredibly disruptive, because a lot of the brands don't necessarily need to go to the agencies to do these experiments per se, because the platforms tend to be a little easier. You know, it's easier than DIY. It's even more intuitive in some cases. And agencies and brand, the whole value chain kind of gets a little bit disruptive, because if the agencies are using AI to generate insights faster, there's a set of clients that will be, great, I want your human intelligence, your perspective. But if brands are now saying, listen, if I have AI tools, this might supplement my research. I might not need this from another agency. Perhaps.
I think that is the threat and the opportunity.
I agree. I totally agree.
And I expect that there will be certain brands who invest heavily in generative AI insights.
Yes.
And will use, just like research today, they will create an in-house department and say, we've got this.
Yeah.
There'll be another set of brands that will say, we want to work with our research partner because we're not going to become experts in how you create a valuable training set, LLM infrastructure for AI. We want you to do it for us. And also, we've been with you for the past 2 decades.
That's right.
And you house all this disparate survey data or customer data that needs to be combined into a single pool of data that can now be trained via LLM for whatever purpose it's going to be. I think you'll see both of those things. And I think we already see research agencies position themselves to be that AI future partner.
I agree. Yeah. And also, to your point, there's companies that have worked with research agencies for over 10, 15, 20 years, and there's a repository of data that can be used and AI can be applied to. What I really loved was one of the conversations that we had, like, you think of a lot of the large companies, agencies, in the past, they were, you know, not as flexible, perhaps just because of size, a little stodgy. They're not, but the perception could be because they move a little slower. But now you look at them in the world of AI, and they have incredible that power, if I would add, because of all the data they've collected for clients and also just syndicated work, right? That's not proprietary to any client. It was, I mean, intuitively you think about it, but when you actually have the conversations and you hear what these large agencies are working on, it's quite amazing.
Yeah, it's very cool. And that historical relationship that's generated a tremendous amount of data now becomes a huge strategic advantage, because it's the both current and historical that drives value in the generative AI scenario. And so that's a huge boon, I think, to some more established market research agencies out there.
Yeah.
And the question is, the advantage of how fast do they move into this? Because it's a threat. What if you take a brand and take all the data you've ever collected, mm-hmm. every survey, every, and you are able to attach and train a sophisticated LLM platform to it, yeah. you give keys to the customer and they never call you again.
That's true. That is true. Yeah.
What percentage of their traditional business insights questions are now 70 to 80% answered by that activity itself? And so I think that's a fundamental question, but it's not just for the research agency, it's for also the data collection in the spectrum as well.
Right.
I happen to think that human beings, being as curious as they are, will very quickly find the edges of what any trained LLM can actually accomplish.
Yeah.
And all of their new research questions will be beyond that capacity, but we shall see how that develops.
Yeah. I think human beings are motivated to survive and thrive. And so are entrepreneurs and business leaders. They're human beings. So I've no doubt that solutions will be created, that some of which we haven't even envisioned today.
I hope we have an envision today. Otherwise, Gen AI is just another version of what's already been done, right?
Yeah, totally.
I think
agree.
New business models, new types of insights. And I expect that the types of questions that are asked change.
Yes.
You think about, say, 20 years ago when online research became possible. The fact that you could do online research and the speed and scale shifted meant that and the audience targeting capability shifted, suddenly the research that was done also changed.
That's right.
Because once you have a certain amount of internet access, certain questions no longer are research questions. They're just, how good am I at searching questions?
Right.
I think the same thing will become true with Gen AI, which certain questions that used to be research questions today now are, Gen AI gets close. I don't need to do that.
I need it now.
There's another set of questions that are far beyond that. What those are and how they're executed, what that looks like, I think we will discover over the next few years. But I think it'll be a typical tech curve where everyone's going to talk about it. There'll be a period of time when everyone's, what happened?
Did it go away?
And then boom, it's going to come. The key value propositions that are fundamentally net new valuable to the customer will really start to grow.
Yeah. What I think about, though, when you think about it settling or the value proposition really presenting itself, I do wonder, like, the tech just keeps evolving. Its capabilities keep evolving. And so I don't know if we get to a place, are we there? I don't know if, like, from online research, that migration, we can breathe after the transition happened, right?
Sure.
Everything was online, data collect. Okay, everybody accepted it. Internet representativity, blah, 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 right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if we're going to have that breathing space with AI, or is it just a continuous evolution and a fast one? I guess that's the difference.
Giddy up. Let's see how the ride looks.
Let's see. I know.
If you look at the larger AI companies today, say OpenAI or the rest, what they talk, their papers and what they're talking about is models training models.
Right.
And so the threat, I think, is how true is that with research and insights?
Mm-hmm.
Can the model deliver insights on a continuous basis,
right?
Based on historical information, and for how long is that? Like, that is where the threat. But they're starting to see that on some level, or that's the open question they're starting to see: is models can train models. I don't need humans
to train the model. Right.
Train the model. If that becomes fundamentally true at a certain threshold, then our industry has a huge threat to it in the short term. It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun.
And I also think this puts the industry, it unites the industry, right? When there's something that's big and undefined as this, it does bring people together. And I think the other thing it does is that we always think, even though the tech is moving as fast as it does, I always keep in mind brands are relying on this information to make multi-million dollar decisions. It's not going to happen over. They're going to have to make sure they know how to rationalize it.
And right now, there's a lot of hallucination.
That's right.
There's a non-trivial amount of hallucination happening.
Yeah.
And on that kind of decision-making, you can't have that kind of error in the outcome.
Yeah. Like, or why do we make that decision? I don't know.
No, it's like the way we've incorporated this AI story into the landscape is by showing the footing of each company in terms of AI. Are they AI first? Have they started talking about AI products, or are they neutral, or actually some are actually maybe even negative to AI, just to give a view on where the hotspots are for AI and not just so we can visualize even not only with a company, but also with a sector or section of the landscape, yes, where's a lot of the activity
where are we seeing more of? Yeah. And I think the other area that, as we talked about the landscape and looked at this intersection of data, technology, and insights, the beauty of it also is that we will probably be able to attract a lot of new and different types of talent.
Mm-hmm.
Where the industry for a long time has been predicated on putting research solutions together. And this now introduces more tech, more data, but also, like, if you're on that value chain of insights, you're getting people who really need to understand the business problem and be able to link the insights to the business problem. And there's more time to do that.
You're absolutely right. We shall see about the timing. If I've learned anything, is that every platform tool is supposed to give back time, another one finds a way to take it. So I wonder about, do we have more time for this or that? But I do agree that when you are able to show to a potential, you know, it's the same employee or investor, yeah, the scope and scale of the industry and how it's evolving, how it's growing, I think that gives a wide open door for talent to say, yes, mm-hmm, I want to jump in.
Yes.
And sometimes those of us who've been in the industry for a long time, as you pointed out earlier, we may be shy a bit about how awesome ResTech, mm-hmm, actually is, right?
Yes.
And the power and importance of the industry in terms of how decisions are made at a corporate level globally. Being a part of that transformation of how decisions are made and informed by data, I, yeah, think is quite of value.
I completely agree. And I'm excited that we get to advocate for our industry, help founders, executives, investors make better sense of the whole thing.
And Seema and I get to hang out a lot more. This has been
there
the best.
There you go. All right. Thanks, Patrick.
No worries.
Thank you for listening to the Data Gurus podcast brought to you by Infinity Square. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review and be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Tired of market research solutions that put your project in a box? At Paradigm Sample, we approach market research support with customized and consultative solutions. Whether you need help with questionnaire design, survey programming, or online data collection, we're ready to assist. Let us know your needs, and we can customize a solution just for you. Learn more at paradigmsample.com.